Hi, my name is Retainer Nyamuda, and welcome back to an extraordinary episode of In My 20s. In My 20s. While you're here, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Now, I am so excited to have my next guest on the show. He is a pioneer and inspiration. So welcoming himself onto the In My 20s podcast and into the In My 20s family, here he is.
Hi, my name is TJ Ngoma. I am a South African actor. I was born and bred in the Eastern Cape with my two amazing parents who raised me beautifully. I am part of the LGBTI community. I identify as a gay man. So yeah, that is pretty much who I am. That's my journey. I love art. I'm passionate about body positivity. I'm passionate about LGBTI issues and I'm passionate about love.
Now, on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, my guests always come through with these incredible mind moments or gem moments, and this is just one of them.
Being bullied in high school, to feeling abandoned by my father, to feeling judged and hurt by my mom through my sexuality and dealing with all that, to feeling rejected by the church, to my culture and being circumcised and the trauma that came with that, and to hooking up with married men and feeling cheap, to losing that job that I wanted so badly, to not feeling worthy, to doubting my career. I had to heal all of that. All of it.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit more about TJ's career history. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about living your truth and what that means to you. And finally, rounding up all three sections is a conversation on the all-consuming 20s journey. Let's get straight into it.
I was obviously raised in the Eastern Cape, and then I moved to Cape Town for the first time when I was 19 years old. After my matric year, and then it was literally, it was such a weird time. It was in 2007. Mm-hmm. Oh, 2008. Yeah. And it was straight after I went to the bush.
Okay.
Straight after I got circumcised. And then I was just like fresh off of East London. And I moved to Cape Town to study theatre and performance at UCT.
Yeah.
Which was just like a wild ride.
I think performing in general is one of the most beautiful things that one can do as a human being. Because you're leaving yourself on the stage. You're putting yourself out there. You're saying, this is who I am. Accept it, appreciate it, love it, take something from it, be changed. And so for you, why acting? Why the theater?
So cut back to grade 11. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I had no idea where I was going. I just had no vision of where, what I wanted after matric. And luckily, my school, which didn't have drama, we didn't teach, it was an all-boys school, so we were very sports heavy, and obviously I sucked at sport. They decided, after a long time, to do a stage production, which was an original that was written by the Afrikaans teacher called Pumpkins on My Roof. I played a French chef.
Hey, mon ami.
I never took it seriously. Like, for me, it was just an opportunity to hang out with my friends for longer. You know what I mean? Because we were rehearsing after school. We were rehearsing on weekends. I'm like, get to see my friends. So I never took it seriously until the first performance. And I went on that stage. I did my thing. And when I went out for the curtain call, and I felt and heard that applause. I remember you're supposed to walk out, bow, and stand, and then walk back. Okay? It was supposed to be a quick thing.
Yeah!
I walked out, I bowed, I looked up, and the roar and the applause. And I just was just like, oh my gosh. I literally stood there, like, frozen, and just, like, taking it in, and, like, and feeling the energy vibrating off of the audience. And then someone, I only stepped back when I saw the next person next to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm sorry, I'm taking your time. This is not my thing. So I moved back. And I just remember standing with, in a row with all the other actors and being like, wow. And I think in that moment, I was like, this is what I should do. This is it. This is definitely what I should be doing.
Yo.
So after that, I pursued it. That's what I did. I found a UCT prospectus. I saw they had theater and performance there, and I was like, okay, great.
I was born for the stage.
I thought, this is what I'm going to do.
So TJ, you are officially the first plus size male model to be signed in South Africa. Like, hey!
Isn't that crazy? In 2020, that's the first.
Exciting. Like, that's really exciting.
It's blows my mind.
Blows my mind. To whom it may concern.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it? Or how did you feel when you found out that you were the first plus size male model to be signed?
I was in disbelief. Because, I mean, I was just like, how am I the first? I've seen plus size models on campaigns, like at Edgar's and places like that. And it was like, no, it was always international models. Mm. It was never homegrown South African man.
What does that mean for you?
It means that there is a lot on my shoulders. it's scary to me.
Yeah.
It's scary to be the first because as the first, you are going to be the blueprint.
Mm.
You are going to take the fall. You are going to make a lot of mistakes. You are going to be the pioneer of this thing.
Mm.
And I didn't see that coming for me. So it's a scary role to take on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, you've been preparing this for this all your life.
Sure.
You've been preparing for this all your life.
Mm.
And even within it now, doing press and like speaking to people about this experience and how this process is going to change fashion and it's going to change people's lives and it's going to change South Africa. I sometimes don't feel worthy to speak about it. Why me?
Mm.
And in those moments where I'm just like lost and I have nothing to say, I think God kind of speaks through me. And I think that's why I'm so now comfortable in it, because I'm just like, this is bigger than me. This is not me doing this for me. This is me doing this for other people out there who mm-hmm. need it, who need to see a plus size male
mm-hmm.
being a model and being represented, and being a representative and being celebrated.
Do you think your approach to life or how you saw yourself would have changed had you had a TJ that you could look up to when you were younger?
Yes, absolutely. As a kid being told, you're so cute, you're so beautiful, what a handsome boy you are. And I never believed it because in my head I was like, yeah, but I'm fat. It kind of recently dawned on me that just being fat doesn't mean you're ugly.
Mm.
And I think that's something that the way big guys that look like me were represented in TV, being the butt of the joke or being the guy that's eating at the buffet, that's never celebrated for being handsome.
Mm.
That kind of informed the way that I felt about myself. And I felt that when you're fat, you're ugly.
Mm.
Or when you're fat, you're the joke.
Mm.
So I think if I grew up seeing a big guy, handsome, sexy, being celebrated.
Hey.
And just being like, being the guy, man.
Mm.
Being the dude.
Being the guy.
I would have looked at that and be like, so I can do it too.
Yeah.
I can be beautiful. I can be handsome. And still have this body and still be a big guy.
Mm.
I would have been way more secure, way sooner had that representation been out there.
I want to actually first touch on Pride.
Mm.
With Pride coming up this Saturday in Cape Town, there is a lot. There's festivities. There is this beautiful nature. Cape Town is probably like the best place to actually experience Pride.
Yeah.
What does it mean for you to be a black gay man living in South Africa today?
I grew up not seeing black gay men.
Mm.
I was an alien. I was the only black gay boy I knew. And I didn't know what being a black gay man looked like.
Mm.
So now being that, I think for a lot of us young black gay men, it's about having a positive image for the younger black gay boys to look at. Mm. So just living an honest, truthful, full life is what's important, so that we can, so they can look at us and see that it's possible to just be loved, to have a good career, to be confident, to be happy, and to live a great life.
Mm.
So for me, that's what it means, is to live honestly, to live beautifully, to live truthfully.
That essence of living truthfully, I think, is just one of those universal truths and concepts that transcends past your sexual orientation or how you classify or how you identify, because everyone needs to live their truth and struggles, because it's like, what is the world going to say? What are my parents going to say? What are my family or my friends going to say? What is social media going to say? Am I good enough? And even when you have started living your truth, it's like the levels and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think it's more easier now for gay men to come out than it was maybe around the time that you came out? Or do you think it is still quite a challenge?
I think all this, I think stories are different. I mean, yes, we live in a more liberal times where gay people are more accepted than 10 years ago. So we've definitely made some great strides, but I think some people obviously still struggle. It depends on the family you were raised in.
Yeah.
You know, some families are super religious, so obviously people in that space will find it extremely difficult to come out. I know very many young black gay boys who in the city will be free and happy and will go to Pride and live this amazing full life, and then when they have to go home, will have to go back into the closet because they can't, they're not brave enough and they're not strong enough to, and they feel like they won't be accepted when they do come out. So it's a struggle. It's hard. It's different for each person. I don't think coming out is easy. It's never easy. Cause it takes a lot of vulnerability. You are essentially saying, so this is who I am, and it could go either way. It could go 50-50.
Yeah.
And it's scary because you're just, obviously you're going to focus on the rejection of it. You're going to be like, they're going to reject me. They're going to reject me. And that's the part that holds you back, is the fear, that hectic fear of rejection.
Yeah. Even now in a world where so many people are out and openly gay and adopting kids and getting married and are celebrated, do you still feel that fear still holds?
Yeah, it does. It does. I think our society still has a long way to go when it comes to gay LGBTI issues. It's still a problem. I mean, especially in our townships, I think people still are a little bit backwards and behind on their beliefs and their thoughts about what it means to be gay.
You've mentioned the LGBTIQ community and your support for them and how you're an activist in the space for the community.
I think it's hard to not be an activist when you're part of the community. Just you living is you being an activist. You know what
That's
so, because when you said activist, I'm like, I don't really.
You're like, but I am.
But I really so am, honestly. Am. So yes, what I agree. Your statement is right.
Okay. But it's interesting, and this might be a naive question,
please.
It's just, I want to understand.
It's just us two here.
When it comes to the LGBTIQ community, it's very easy to either say something or do something if you're not in the community that is deemed offensive. And one doesn't want to be offensive.
No.
And yes, we are on one hand in a very sensitive time in the country, in South Africa, on the continent, in the world. But I would say, like, how does one approach not knowing enough about the community in a non-offensive way?
Okay, so I can honestly say that for a very long time, I didn't know about any other issues that affected the other members of my community outside of gay men. I was very ignorant to trans issues. I was very ignorant to lesbians' issues. I was very ignorant to transgender people's issues. So I think when you come into that space, or any space actually, where you don't know, or you're trying to find out, or you're trying to understand that person's experience, you have to come from a place of ignorance. You don't know anything. So you have to come from a humble, ignorant place. And you have to be honest and upfront about that and be like, I don't know anything about trans issues. But I humbly am here to understand and to ask about what the issues and the kind of things that you have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. So to take things back a little bit, you spoke about the period between high school and varsity where you went to the bush.
Yes.
And in society, there are certain things that we don't speak about.
Yes.
And going to the bush is one of those things that we don't talk about in Versus Commons, especially in the Xhosa community, the black community. There are certain cultural things that we don't reveal out of culture. But in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of talk or revealing of what happens in the bush. So through movies or TV series or articles.
Yes.
And then in the news, the increase of deaths of young men who have gone to the bush. So my first question is around culture in this decade. Do you still feel that the bush is, I think, I personally think that there are some practices, so understanding the mindset of what it means to be a man, and I think there are beautiful things in culture, right? But the actual circumcision and the processes around that, do you still feel like that is something that should be done in this decade? Or what are your opinions on the way, or the processes and procedures around going to the bush in this decade?
Okay, I can only speak from my experience, and my experience is very, it's very 50-50. Because there's a side of me that really, really appreciates that process and that initiation and that experience. Because what it did for me was, it honestly gave me time to connect with myself and to be within myself. Because you're literally in the bush for 4 weeks.
Sure.
Without any TV, without any friends. It's just you by yourself. And it was the first time that I got to be alone with, and just like in me, and deal with me and deal with my own thoughts and what I wanted from life. And, I also got to spend a lot of time with my dad, and usually my mom is the one who obviously take care, and she'd be the tender one, and you know, she'd take her role as the nurturing woman in my family. But I really got to spend time with my dad, and he was taking care of me, because you're not supposed to see your mom throughout that whole process. So I got to spend a lot of time with my dad, and he took such good care of me. And I grew up a lot in those 4 weeks. I learned what it is to take care of yourself physically, to take care of yourself mentally, and to take care of yourself emotionally. I think people forget that it's surgery, because you have to go through that operation and you have to heal. And there's no medication. There's no anesthesia. They use leaves to help you to heal. So that takes its toll on you mentally and physically and emotionally. And you have to be strong to, like, you know, deal with that on a daily basis and kind of like to make it through. So I appreciate aspects of it. And then there's this other side of it that is just like completely for me, just like, has no place in our world today. It really doesn't. There's a certain perpetuation of patriarchy that happens in the initiation school. There's a lot of, because what it is that when you become a man in the hierarchy of now Xhosa culture, the father, who's your father, is the head of the household, and then you are now underneath him. You are next in line. Your power comes next, and then your mother is supposed to be submissive now to you. And for me, obviously being the woke child that I am, I was like, that's not how it works. My mom is
My mom.
She's yeah. my mother. I yeah. respect
She's my
her.
Queen.
I love her.
She's my yes, queen. Yeah.
And I think a lot of the patriarchal things that we struggle with in my culture come from that. It's teachings that are just being handed down to the next generation every year.
Mm.
And it's toxic masculinity just being handed to the next generation over and over and over and over. They were saying things to me that I was just like, no, that's not how it works.
Mm.
That's not how the world works. So yeah, I think. In my personal opinion, I think there's no place for that, that initiation school in 2020. I think after last year and femicide and, you know, hashtags like men is trash and toxic masculinity and, patriarchy and just like all this toxic energy around, men and culture and beliefs, Yeah, there's no place for it in 2020.
Mm.
And I think what that process of initiation does is that it perpetuates it. And
we
just need to be better. We need to just realize that there's no point in continuing that practice.
Yeah. So when it comes to culture, then the question is what stays and what goes? And who decides it?
Exactly.
I don't have the answers. I'm just asking.
Because
even for myself, Zimbabwean born, South African raised, when it comes for me, the time for me to get married, what traditions and customs and cultures
am I going to take with me if
I don't marry a Zimbabwean guy? Which I might not. I'm still single, so I mean,
You're open.
I'm very open.
Whatever happens, happens.
But also depending on what culture you marry into, what cultures and customs are important for your partner to bring into this relationship and for you to bring in the relationship, and how does that carry out and affect your kids?
Exactly.
And those are such important questions to have.
Exactly.
And then even with having kids, whether you have a partner or not, or you have kids by yourself. Again, what is important for you that you've learned that you're going to pass on?
Exactly.
And
I mean, I know personally for me, my kids will not go through that process.
Mm.
If I have a son, he's not going to the bush.
Mm.
He's not going to go to the bush.
But don't they say amongst his... Okay, it might be different when you have a son and he's old enough to go to the bush.
Yeah.
But right now I've heard that if your son doesn't go to the bush, he's looked down upon by everybody else in the community that he didn't go. And you're privileged in the sense that you live in a very liberal inner city.
Yeah.
But think about if you didn't live in the city, if you live in the rural areas, if you live in a place where culture is so entrenched and so deep, and you're just like, I'm not going to go. What does that do for you? Now you're an outcast. So
that's true. Okay. Now I've rethought it. I think if there wasn't all the secrecy around it, if we were honest about what happens there, and we'd give our young boys the decision, like you decide whether that's something you want to go through or not. Because the reason why I said no is that I think I basically touched on it is because of the teachings and everything like that is, and I didn't know about them. I went in blind. And now that I know, and now that I mean, obviously I'm a more liberal person. I wouldn't want my child to go through that. But if they did, then I'd tell them everything that they would have to go through and that they would have to deal with. And then let them make that decision. So it's not about eradicating the whole practice. It's about being more transparent about the practice so that we can... Our young boys can be more informed and can make a more conscious decision about whether or not that is something that they would be willing to do. So that if you do decide not to, you can be confident in whatever adversity you will have to deal with when you are shunned from the community, let's say. The first step would be, why the secrecy? What are we hiding? If it's such a beautiful process and it's something that men should take pride in going through and being in, then why the secrecy? What are you hiding? And they know what they're hiding. They're hiding the toxicity and the patriarchy that they've been trying to protect for years and years and years with them.
TJ, coming to the third section of the podcast, and one of my personal favorite sections of the podcast is all about the 20s journey.
Yes.
So I want to find out, how would you summarize your 20s?
Disaster. That's it. I'm done.
Stunning. Disaster. We're done here. Actually, tell me about your quarter life crisis. Did you go through a quarter life crisis?
Of course. I went to like six.
Oh. Tell me about your most intensive quarter life crisis. What was it and how did you come out of it?
My 20s were a whirlwind. When I think back to my quarter life crisis, the first thing that pops in my head is doubt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of doubt.
Yeah.
I doubted everything I did. I didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
You know, my life hadn't gone the way that I'd planned. I questioned my career. I questioned my friends. I questioned the things that I liked. I questioned my upbringing. I questioned my family. I was just lost. There's nothing I could hold on to. And I was deeply depressed. Deeply depressed. And I felt very much alone. It was excruciating. Excruciating. And now looking back at it, it was the greatest thing that I ever went through.
Sure.
As painful and as horrible and as much as, you know, I wanted it to end, I'm so grateful I went through that. There's a lot of pressure that comes with being in your 20s. There's a big misconception that you have to have everything together in your 20s. You have to know where you're going career-wise. You have to be in a stable relationship. You have to have your kids lining up. Your job has to be bomb. You have to have a great social life. You have to have your car. You have to have your house. There's all these weird misconceptions that your 20s is where everything is going to come together. But I solely in my spirit believe your 20s are supposed to be havoc. They're supposed to be the years where you're messing up left, right, and center.
Yeah.
You know? You're supposed to be lost. You're supposed to be scared. You're supposed to doubt everything. And I definitely feel like that's what my 20s were. And there was a lot of struggling with self. And that was tough to get through.
Yeah.
It was very tough to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of comfort, I think, in hearing someone say, especially when you're going through it, that it's supposed to be like this. Because I think our generation, and this is something that keeps coming up, it's like, we are that social media generation. Not as intense as Gen Z.
No.
But we are that. Y'all will be in my 20s soon.
Yes.
If you're not already in my 20s, y'all, this will be a different conversation. It'll be like, was that the same decade?
Right? Yes.
But it's just like when you're going through it and you're crying through it and you're painting through it and you're ticking off everything you've just said on the box. There is some comfort in knowing that you're not alone in the struggle, that you're not the only one in the world feeling what you're feeling. You're not the only one questioning. You're not the only one in the world feeling like you're an imposter. Yeah. Like, you don't actually know what you're doing. Like, you're just like, hi, I wake up in the morning. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's just like no one tells you while you're going through it that it's okay to go through it.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're going through it by yourself because obviously your experience is unique to you.
Yes, of course.
But that a lot of people are having a unique quarter life crisis at the same time as you.
Mm. for me, the scariest part of my quarter life crisis was waking up and feeling nothing. Like I would wake up and open my eyes and I'd feel nothing.
What do you mean?
Nothing. No passion, no excitement. I would even have settled for sorrow. You know, I would have settled for anxiety. I would have settled for anger. I felt nothing. I would wake up and feel nothing about the day. Nothing about it. And I went through life like that for so long. And actually now looking back, I'm actually surprised. I don't think anyone noticed. No one noticed.
Sure.
Because I could masquerade and I could still smile and I could perform myself. And they're like, oh, TJ's being himself. He's fine. But you could perform, I could perform myself because I knew what TJ looked like when he was okay. So I could perform that.
And do you know why that is so intense?
Yeah.
It's because you're an actor.
Right.
And now you're playing. Right.
I'm playing myself part. In my real life.
Hey!
Isn't that wild?
That's wild. That's wild.
Mind warped.
That's a mind moment. That is a mind moment.
It's insane. But, I mean, now I know that it was because I didn't trust anyone with how I really felt and what I really was going through. I didn't want to be vulnerable because I was in my 20s now. I was in my mid 20s.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be together. I was supposed to have it all.
Yeah.
So I couldn't be vulnerable and sad and say, I have no idea where I'm going and I don't know what I'm doing and I don't feel a single thing about life. There's no excitement. There's no passion. There's no optimism. There's no love. I just felt empty. And that was so hard. That was so difficult to go through. But I had to. I had to go through that. So that I could come out of it so much clearer. And so much more honest. And so much more grateful. For feeling, for living, for experiencing, for connection. I think a lot of the time we're not present. Things are happening and we don't deal with it. We kind of like just power through.
Yeah.
And then through powering through, yes, you can power through, but that stuff is on you. It just piles up on you. And then 10 years later, you've got all this stuff in you. You don't know what to do with because you haven't dealt with it. I needed to go back so that I could heal all of my wounds through being bullied in high school, to feeling abandoned by my father, to feeling judged and hurt by my mom, through my sexuality and dealing with all that, through feeling rejected by the church, to my culture and being circumcised and the trauma that came with that, and to getting my heart broken, to feeling rejected, to hooking up with married men and feeling cheap, to losing that job that I wanted so badly, to not feeling worthy, to doubting my career. I had to heal all of that. All of it. And to heal it, I had to go through it and go back and feel those feelings and allow them to sit in my body and strengthen me so that I could be strong enough to go forward. And so that when now moving forward in my life, I was stronger. I could take whatever life would throw at me because now I was secure and strong in myself, in my identity, in who I was and what I wanted.
And so TJ, I want to ask, in all of the advice that you've shared and sharing your story, what one piece of advice would you want to offer people in their 20s right now?
Be be present.
Mm.
Be present in your life. Don't go through the motions. Don't power through. Power through. Don't fake it till you make it. That is the worst advice anyone's ever given. Fake it till you make it. You're faking confidence. That will catch up to you. You'll realize in a later day that you're actually not confident.
Mm.
And that will set you back in your life because you didn't take the time to build your confidence. You faked it. So you have to be present and you have to deal with your life with every moment that comes.
Mm.
Always be present every day and every moment.
Mm.
Be in your losses and go through them and deal with them and talk about them and express them with other people, because in that you'll find a community and you'll find who the real people that are going to hold you up and help you get through this life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing I could say is be present.
Mm.
Be present in your life.
Mm. Thank you so much, TJ, for coming onto today's episode of the In My 20s podcast, for sharing your journey and being so open and honest with us on the things that you have learned. You are a true, true inspiration. To everybody else listening, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please don't forget to follow us on all our social media platforms and subscribe so you never miss a podcast episode. Otherwise, we will catch you same time, same place, right here on In My 20s.